Munaya,
Munaya,
great sages,
Padavin,
Paradin,
Path,
Yasya,
Yasya,
whose, Niyasangena,
Niyasangena, by detachment, Uru Janmabi, after many births,
Na,
Na,
never,
never,
Vidu,
Vidu,
understood,
understood,
Mrigayana,
Yantaha,
searching for, Api,
certainly.
Tivra yoga,
Tivra yoga,
severe austerities,
Samadhina,
by trance. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Narad Muni continued, after trying this process for many, many births and remaining unattached to material contamination, placing themselves continually in trance and executing many types of austerities, many mystic yogis were unable to find the end of the path of God realization. There is no purport, so we'll go to the next verse, text 32. We'll just read the translation and purport. For this reason, my dear boy, you should not endeavor for this. It will not be successful. It is better that you go home. When you are grown up, by the mercy of the Lord, you will get a chance for these mystic performances. At that time, you may execute this function. Purport. Generally, a thoroughly trained person takes to spiritual perfection at the end of his life. According to the Vedic system, therefore, life is divided into four stages. In the beginning, one becomes a brahmachari, a student who studies Vedic knowledge under the authoritative guidance of a spiritual master. He then becomes a householder and executes household duties according to the Vedic process. Then the householder becomes a vanaprastha. And gradually, when he is mature, he renounces household life and vanaprastha life also and takes to sannyas, completely devoting himself to devotional service. Generally, people think that childhood is meant for enjoying life by engaging oneself in sports and play. Youth is meant for enjoying the company of young girls. And when one becomes old, at the time of death, then he may try to execute devotional service or a mystic yoga process. But this conclusion is not for devotees who are actually serious. The great sage Narada is instructing Dhruva Maharaj just to test him. Actually, the direct order is that from any point of life, one should begin rendering devotional service. But it is the duty of the spiritual master to test the disciple to see how seriously he desires to execute devotional service. After that, he may be initiated. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manodhisham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate virim yat kripatam aham vande shri guru dinatarinam vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So we are continuing to hear the conversation between Narad Muni and Dhruva Maharaj. This chapter is entitled Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home. So a few verses ago we saw the pastime that happened wherein Dhruva Maharaj's stepmother insulted him and Dhruva Maharaj being a Kshatriya could not tolerate that insult. So he left home and he has gone to the forest under the instructions of his own real mother Suniti. So if we see Canto 4 is very instructive. There are lots of lessons that we can learn from Canto 4. We just finished, before the Dhruva Maharaj pastime started, we just finished the Daksha pastime. The Daksha, Lord Shiva and Sati pastime. And one of the main lessons that we learned from the Daksha pastime was how not to judge Vaishnavas by the externals and what is the ramification or the repercussion of doing Vaishnava Prad. So Vaishnava Prad was the main theme of that particular section. And now Dhruva Maharaj's pastime has started, and for the next few chapters we'll be discussing the life of Dhruva Maharaj. And one of the main lessons we can learn from Dhruva Maharaj's pastimes is how to do Tivra Bhakti, how to execute devotional service with determination in a short period of time, that too. So it's definitely possible to achieve perfection in a short period of time by doing Tivra Bhakti or intense devotional service. And that is what Dhruva Maharaj is teaching us through his life story. After Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, we will come to the pastime of King Vena and King Prithu. And they represent what a demoniac king is like and what happens to the citizens when a demoniac king rules the kingdom, as versus King Prithu, who is an ideal king, and how an ideal king should actually be ruling the kingdom. So that pastime will come up after Dhruva Maharaj's pastime is over. And then towards the end of Canto 4, we will come to the pastime of Puranjana, where the analogy of a woman is given. It's a very analogical pastime. So it describes how we should not be attached to the body and to the opposite sex. So that particular lesson will come out through the Puranjana pastime. And then Canto 4 ends with the pastime of Prachina Bari and the Prachetas. And again we'll see Narad Muni enter the Bhagavatam, where Narad Muni will instruct. He will give lots of nice instructions to King Prachina Bari on what is he is to expect when he leaves this world. So that is how Canto 4 has been panned out. It's very instructive for devotees, for practicing devotees. Lots of lessons for us to learn. But concentrating on Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, so the main lesson, that the take-home message for practicing devotees, is that definitely it is possible to perfect our lives in a short period of time by doing intense devotional service, just as Dhruva Maharaj did. So it mainly requires determination. And like Prabhupada said, that Prabhupada has said in this particular purport, that usually people in the Vedic system, it was a gradual process of achieving self-realization, but this is not the case for serious devotees. Prabhupada says that devotees who are actually serious do not wait for that gradual purification process. And he said Narad Muni is saying all this mainly to test Dhruva Maharaj, to test his sincerity and to test his determination. So there are a few themes which are coming out between verse 31 and 32. And in verse 31, the main theme that we are seeing, which Narad Muni is talking about, is how the mystic process of yoga is very difficult to execute. So it's very difficult to execute, first of all, and even if someone has done that difficult path of executing the process of mystic yoga, there is a risk of failure. Like Narad Muni is telling Dhruva Maharaj, that many mystic yogis were unable to find the path of God realization. So even they did meditation, even though they performed severe austerities, at the end they could not achieve the desired goal, which was achieving devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the difficulty of the mystic yoga process has been described. And in verse 32, whatever process one decides to execute, whether it's mystic yoga process or bhakti yoga process, one must not wait till old age. That is what is the theme Prabhupada is bringing out in the purport. And also the third theme that comes out in this purport is how a guru tests the disciple, just to see the sincerity of the disciple and to see how determined the disciple is. So we will touch base a little bit on these three themes today. So if we consider theme 1, which is today's verse, verse 31, it talks about the mystic process of Ashtanga Yoga and how difficult it is to execute this mystic process. So the first step in Ashtanga Yoga is that one has to leave home. That process cannot be executed sitting in the comfort of one's home. Now that process itself is very difficult, especially in today's age. It's very difficult for a person to give up his home. And let's say a person decides, okay, I am going to give up my home. He's very determined, he's detached from his family. So the next process or the next requirement of mystic yoga is that you go to the forest to execute those austerities or to execute the process of mystic yoga, because you need that environment to be able to achieve success in executing the different aspects of mystic yoga. So then there the second difficulty comes up. Where is one going to find a forest in today's world? You know, with urbanization, most of the forests have been cut down, and even if there are a few forests left, it is going to be very difficult for a person to find a secluded spot where he can execute his mystic yoga process. And we see nowadays everybody is making even the forests into a business. So I know in my office there is one EGM. He was telling me he went to New Zealand for a trek during the Christmas holidays. And he was describing the whole experience that there's a big group and it's a big business, it's a booming business. So they actually go into forests, like into uncharted territory sort of. And I was describing, oh, then it must have been quite austere for y'all to, you know, go into paths which have not been treaded by others and all. And he said, no, actually it's very comfortable. The organizers have made very beautiful cottages in the forest where we can, you know, once we've done our trekking, we come back, so hot food will be ready for us and beautiful, you know, ensuite cottages have been made for us. So it's actually not very austere. So I was just thinking about that, that if somebody even wants to go to a forest, people have made a business out of these forests. You will find these beautiful cottages, people coming on a trek, trying to experience the wilderness of forests. The forests are meant for all these purposes, to achieve self-realization. But people want to make a business, and they are making, converting them also into tourist spots. So that is the second difficulty someone will face if someone takes up the process of Ashtanga Yoga, of executing austerities. First of all, whether to leave home, very difficult to leave family and go out. And the second difficulty is in finding a forest where one can execute their service. But if we look, compare that with Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is susukham kartum avyayam. It is enjoyable. It is not there. One is not required to perform severe austerities. One is not required to perform the austerity of leaving one's home. It can be executed in home, in forest, anywhere. And like Bhakti Vinod Thakur says in one of his famous songs, he says, Grihe thako, vane thako, sada hari bole dako. That means whether you live in Griha, which is your home, or vane thako, whether you are living in the forest, it doesn't matter what place you are residing in or what ashram also you are in. Just chant the holy names of Lord Hari. That's the only thing that you need to do. And we know the famous pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructing one of his disciples. So there was a young boy called Gaur Gopal, and he was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's helper. So he used to stand with a lota in his hand when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to answer nature's call. And once he heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is answering nature's call, and he is continuously hearing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came out, this boy, I think his name was Gaur Gopal, he asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said that you are answering nature's call. It is such an abominable act. It is a moochi act that you are doing, but you are chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is so pure. So how can you do that while you are answering nature's call? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him. So he said that what to do? I am not able to stop my tongue from vibrating. And do you think it's wrong? Do you think I should stop? I am not able to, unable to stop it even while I'm answering nature's call. So now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has thrown the question back to him, to that little boy. And then the little boy understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. And he said that, no, my Lord, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra you have only said can be executed, can be chanted anywhere. So from that day onwards, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you are actually my guru, because you are instructing me that I can chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra anywhere. So he was very happy with that answer. But with this whole pastime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was trying to instruct us that anywhere, wherever you are, you can continue chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. There is no hard and fast rule. There is no need to go to the forest. There is no need to leave home. Chant at any time, any place, under any circumstance. So, bhakti is a very sukh-sukham process. It can be executed with joy and it can be executed anywhere. Very simple process to follow. But if we see the process of Ashtanga Yoga, and if we look at these mystic yogis, their focus is more on austerity than devotion. And we have examples in the scriptures of these people. We know so many demons execute austerities actually. We know the example of Hiranyakashipu. Now, how many austerities Hiranyakashipu performed? In fact, I don't think, you know, even the great mystic yogis can perform the austerities which Hiranyakashipu performed. His whole body was eaten away by ants, he was covered by an anthill, and he was maintaining his life air in the skeleton, in the bone frame. Now, who can perform such severe austerities? In fact, Lord Brahma, when he came to give him benediction, he had to first locate Hiranyakashipu because he was covered under an anthill. So this is how demons also execute austerities. Ravana had also executed austerities to achieve whatever he wanted to. And yesterday in a Bhaktivedanta class, we had been discussing. The pastime of Kalyavana is now going to start. Jarasandha and Kalyavana pastime is going on. And Kalyavana's history was being discussed. And it is said that the son of Gargamuni, his name was Griga, I think, he was once laughed upon by the Yadus. And he feels very insulted because he was laughed upon by the Yadus. And he decides to perform austerity so that he can get some power to get back or take revenge on the Yadus. So the austerity he performs, and usually these demoniac people try to please Lord Shiva because Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. He gets easily pleased. So he actually decided that he's only going to eat metal powder every day. And that is how he's going to please Lord Shiva with his austerities. So he continuously eats metal powder, and when Lord Shiva becomes pleased, then he asks for a boon, and that is how Kalyavana was produced. And then Kalyavana becomes the person who's very inimical to the Yadus and especially to Krishna. And he wants to destroy Krishna and the Yadus. So this is how, you know, austerities are sometimes even misused by demoniac people, because the goal is not bhakti at all. The goal is through these austerities to achieve some material benediction or to achieve something, some ill intent or some ill intention which they have in their mind. Like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, all these people had. Now let's say somebody starts with the noble intention of doing Ashtanga Yoga with the aim of achieving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They have that aim that yes, I want to realize the Paramatma, which is the goal of Ashtanga Yoga, and then I want to progress to devotion. So even if somebody starts with that intention, there is still a risk of fall down. Like Narad Muni saying in this verse. Narad Muni saying that even if somebody does these austerities for many, many years, he can still not achieve the end goal. And why is that happening? Why can that happen? That risk is there because once we execute Ashtanga Yoga, a person executes Ashtanga Yoga, he gets lots of mystic perfections while executing the Ashtanga Yoga process. And once he starts getting those mystic perfections, they can actually become a distraction for him from achieving the end goal, which was the devotional path. So we know that Krishna says, in the nectar of devotion it is said, that pure devotional service is very durlabh. Krishna does not like to award pure devotional service to anybody. He is happy to give everything else. He is happy to give material opulence. He is happy to even give mystic perfections. But he is not happy to give pure devotional service to people. So it's very difficult. So he's happy to give these mystic perfections to the Ashtanga yogis. And that is a test actually Ashtanga yogis undergo. Are they happy to then accept these mystic perfections and just be content, you know, having these siddhis in their body? Or are they happy to still go ahead and perform devotional service to the Supreme Lord and achieve the end goal of their mystic perfections? So that is one more risk which these people face, that they can get sidetracked. And they will not achieve their goal. They will just be happy with the mystic perfections of becoming lighter than the lightest or heavier than the heaviest, being able to present in two places at the same time. These are some of the mystic perfections which these people achieve, and they just become content. So that is one more risk if we execute devotional service. In fact, in the third canto, chapter 23, verse 56, in Devahuti's lamentation, there is a famous verse which says, Neha yat karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate na tirtha pada sevaya jivan api mrito hisa. What is this verse? It says that anyone whose work does not elevate him to religious life. So a person is executing his karma yoga or executing his duties in this world. However, if those duties are not raising him to devotion, to religious life, you know, he says, oh, I'm doing this duty. Like, we know the example of Mrigadi, the hunter. Before Narad Muni came to him, he used to actually kill animals and he used to leave them half dead. And then Narad Muni questioned him and he said, I'm doing it for the satisfaction of, like, I'm executing this duty because my profession is a hunter and I'm doing it to look after my family. And then Narad Muni tells him, then go and ask your family, are they happy to partake in the sins that you are accruing by this act of yours? And he's in for a shock. His family is not happy to take part in the sins that he has accrued. So he was doing it for his family, but was it leading him to religious life? It wasn't. So this verse is actually opening our eyes to that anyone whose work does not elevate him to the platform of religious life. Anyone, and then the next level, anyone whose ritualistic religious activities do not bring renunciation in him. So we see, in fact, in India, we see this a lot. People do, you know, big yagyas, or sometimes there is, you know, different homas that are done for satisfying different demigods. But if it is actually giving you more and more material benedictions, and it is giving you more and more opportunities for sense gratification, then what is the use of these big ritualistic activities? They are not producing renunciation in your heart. And Bhagavatam, being the Amala Purana, is rejecting those religious ritualistic activities. So any activity, whether it's performed as a religious activity, if it is not producing renunciation in the heart, then it is not going to be useful for you to achieve your end goal. And then the Bhagavatam goes on to further give us the next level. So the Bhagavatam says that anyone in renunciation, and now we come to what Narad Muni is also talking about, that anyone who has achieved this mystic, you know, they are executing lots of austerities and they are quite renounced because they are able to execute these austerities. However, anyone who is in renunciation does not take up devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is what we see, these mystic yogis getting sidetracked with perfections. Then that is useless. It is considered shrama eva hi kevalam. So Bhagavatam says that jivan api mrito hi sa, that they are actually dead even though they are breathing. These people who are situated in renunciation but who are not able to then take up the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Plus we know that Ashtanga Yoga takes thousands and thousands of years to execute. And that was the process in Satya Yuga, where people had long lifespans. They had lifespans of 100,000 years. So they could execute Ashtanga Yoga. But again, it will not be relevant to this age because our lifespan is 60, 70, 80 years at max. So Dhruv Maharaj is in Satya Yuga and he is definitely going to execute the process of Ashtanga Yoga. So after all this testing, Narad Muni gives him the process. And he will execute actually severe austerities or severe process of Ashtanga Yoga. But the whole purpose why he is going to do that is mainly to achieve the lotus feet, the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he gets that goal. The Lord comes and gives him darshan. And we'll see further ahead in the pastime how Dhruv Maharaj then realizes that I was looking for broken pieces of glass when the diamond of the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in front of me. So that was the first theme, how Ashtanga Yoga is difficult to execute, and even if someone executes, someone can get sidetracked by the mystic perfections that are offered to him and they may not achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second theme is Narad Muni is dissuading him from doing all this and saying that you are young, a mere young child. Please do all this in your old age. Just wait till you're old. Right now just go and enjoy. And then you can execute these devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada says in his purport that serious devotees don't wait for old age. They actually would like to execute devotional service right from childhood. In fact, serious devotees we know in our moment are very careful when even they, before they even have a child, they conceive a child. They try to attract a pure soul to the womb. So the purificatory process starts even before a child is conceived. So for the child, the training starts while he's in the womb. Like devotees do Garbhadan Sanskar to have a good child and then they execute lots of devotional service even while the child is in the womb. Just to train the child to become a good devotee even before he's born. So what to speak of childhood? For a devotee, a serious devotee, the training starts in the womb. And we know the famous pastime of Prahlad Maharaj. For him also, the whole thing, devotional service, his his proclivity to do devotional service or his attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead started while he was in the womb of his mother Kayadhu. Otherwise, he is actually a demon son. Who would have trained him in childhood to become a devotee? In fact, he was being trained to become a very good demon and how to execute, you know, live, rule the kingdom like a demon. But he understood all this from Narad Muni while he was in the womb. And then Prahlad Maharaj gives us the famous verse. He tells us, Komaram acharet pragyo dharman bhagavatam iha durlabham manusham janma tad api adhruvam arthadam. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying that devotional service must be executed from childhood. And like Narasimha Kavach Prabhu was saying so nicely in the class yesterday, that who knows whether we will live till old age to execute devotional service. Especially in Kali Yuga, given the nature of this age, we don't know whether we are going to live till 60, 70 or 80. Like, you know, now a video has been circulating in different WhatsApp groups. I'm sure you all must have also seen how the AGM, the general manager of, I think, Bank of Baroda, he left his body while he was giving his retirement speech. So it was the last day in office for him. And he was retiring on that day. Everybody else had given his farewell speech, and then it was his turn to speak. And this, the video actually shows he has started thanking all the staff, and he's saying how he was so happy to be given an opportunity. I think he served for many, many years in that bank. And he was thanking the staff, and while thanking, he just fell. His head just toppled on the table, and he left the body. I'm sure he must have made some post-retirement plans. I'm sure he must have had something. There must be a party which must have been planned for him in the evening or something. So all his office colleagues, his family, friends, everyone were there. But he left his body just like that. So there is no guarantee whether we will go till old age. We know so many accidents that are happening. Like, you know, one of our devotees' cousins, cousin brother, and his two children had gone to Haridwar or Rishikesh or somewhere. And it was so foggy. They couldn't see where they were driving, and the car actually went down a cliff and the whole family died. And it was so difficult to even retrieve the bodies of the family because it went down a cliff, like it went down quite deep. So there, and there were young people, they were hardly in their 40s or something like that. And the children were quite young. So there is no guarantee whether we will reach old age, first of all. And the second aspect why we should execute, if you know we are serious about devotional life, is Prabhupada says, give your best years to Krishna consciousness. Don't wait till old age, because in old age we know senses don't cooperate. We know the body stops working. Now there was, in a lecture I was listening, one person had visited an old age home. And he was seeing old people perform their daily simple activities. And that this person could see that it was so hard for these old people even to do simple activities which we take for granted. Like one old man was trying to cut his nails, his toenails. And you know, his hand was shaking first of all because of his old age. He had no control over movements. And he was not able to reach till his toenails. You know how it becomes difficult to bend your body and all that. So he was not even able to reach till his toe so that he can cut his nails. So it was so difficult for this old man to even do simple activity like cutting his own toenails. That was so hard for him. So are we wanting to give these years to Krishna when we are not able to even see properly or hear properly, not even hold a bead back properly probably because our hands are shaking? Prabhupada says, give your best years. And if we see in childhood, if we take up Krishna consciousness, then good habits form since childhood. It is very difficult to change habits when you're old. That's why if we try to preach to old people who have had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, it is very hard to change their views. If they have some set views, it's very difficult to then bring them to the path of Krishna consciousness. Because the old habits die hard. They have just, you know, it's all ingrained in their system. And now if someone's trying to tell them that this is a good path for you, it's difficult for old people to change their mindset. And therefore it's important that we take up devotional service in our young age so that good habits start forming from childhood itself. So that is one more reason why Prabhupada says serious devotees don't wait till they are old. And also if we see old people, very difficult to change their mindset, and most of the old people are wasting their time. If you see even in India or even in these Western countries, They are either, you know, watching TV, Netflix all the day, watching serials after serials, or they are going, there are so many clubs and, you know, they are being encouraged, live life to the fullest for old people. They are not being encouraged that, okay, now you've lived your life to the fullest, now at least dedicate some time to self-realization. Even in old age, they are encouraged to continue what young people would do. And, you know, they are told, they are inspired that let age not be a barrier. Please continue with the enjoyment even in your old age. So there are so many clubs where, you know, old people can go and play cards to pass their time, or bowling. You know, all these clubs are there for these old people to get together and just kill time. So very difficult to then, you know, convince these old people to then take up the path of Krishna consciousness. And therefore Prabhupada says, please execute, like Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Kaumara Macharet Pragyo, start devotional life from the womb itself or from a young age so that you can perfect your life, because we don't even know if old age will come. And the third theme is about Guru testing his disciple. So again, Narasimha Kavach Prabhu covered it in yesterday's verse. And we are seeing that Narad Muni is testing Dhruv Maharaj over here. Just seeing whether he is determined, and whether he is determined despite the dissuading him from executing devotional service. He is giving him lots of reasons. He is saying that first of all, Ashtanga Yoga is difficult. Many people have tried but they have not achieved their goal. So he is dissuading him from the process. Then he is also dissuading him based on his age. He is telling him, look, you are very young. Come back to us when you are old. That time I will teach you how to do devotional service. Right now just go home and enjoy your life. Play like young children like to play. So different reasons Narad Muni is giving to dissuade him. But like we saw in yesterday's verse, Krishna has actually sent Narad Muni to initiate Dhruv Maharaj. But every guru actually likes to test his disciple, to see whether the disciple is ready to then be faithful to the path of devotional service throughout his life. Because if you give devotion initiation cheaply, that disciple might just go away after that. He might not stick to the path of devotional service. And that is what Narad Muni is doing over here. He's testing the faith and the determination of Dhruv Maharaj. And this is not the first instance we see where a guru tests his disciple. In the scriptures, we know the pastime of Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya is the famous Sampradaya Acharya of Sri Sampradaya. And he was tested before he was given the Vedic Mantra initiation. So Ramanujacharya's Guru Maharaj was Goshtipurna. And he was told by his Siksha Gurus that you are now ready, go and take Vedic Mantra initiation from Goshtipurna, because he is a very elevated saint and he is the right person to give you initiation. So Ramanujacharya was very happy because he had heard about the glories of Goshtipurna. And now that Goshtipurna's village was at hundreds of kilometers away from where Ramanujacharya used to live. So and in those days there was no transport, there was no flight or, you know, trains or anything like that. So Ramanujacharya actually walked the whole distance to Goshtipurna. And he went and fell at the lotus feet of Goshtipurna and he begged him. He told him, please give me initiation in the Vedic mantra. I have been told of your glories and I will consider myself very fortunate if you accept me as your disciple. And Goshtipurna was very humble. So he did not want to accept any disciples at all. So he actually sends Ramanujacharya back. He says that no, you come some other day. I am not ready to initiate you today. So then Ramanujacharya is very disappointed. So he walks all the way back. Again he is told by his Siksha Guru that no, he is the right person to give you initiation. Go back to him and please request him for initiation. So again Ramanujacharya takes that trip. He walks all the way, hundreds of kilometers to Goshtipurna's village. He again begs him, and this time also Goshtipurna, out of his humility, refuses to give initiation. And this occurs 17 times. So 17 times Ramanujacharya had to go back and come back, and Goshtipurna was not ready to initiate him. So, you know, the scriptures say that Goshtipurna was actually testing the determination of Ramanujacharya. But Ramanujacharya, being the acharya that he was very determined that he is not going to rest till he gets his initiation from Goshtipurna. So when the 18th time Ramanujacharya walks back to Goshtipurna, that time Goshtipurna's heart melts, seeing at the determination of Ramanujacharya. And he agrees to give him initiation. And then, you know, the famous pastime is there. Goshtipurna actually initiates him in the Vedic mantra. But he tells him that this is a very secret mantra and I'm going to tell you because I have seen that, I've tested you and I've seen that you are qualified. But do not give this mantra to anybody else. If you do that, you will go to hell. So please, please maintain the secrecy of this mantra. And he says that anybody who hears this mantra, they will immediately achieve the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They will achieve Vaikuntha. They will achieve liberation from this world. So please protect it because we don't want unqualified people to get this mantra and to, you know, then achieve the lotus feet of the Lord. So Ramanujacharya is very thankful with a grateful heart. He starts walking back from Goshtipurna's village. And while he is walking back, in his mind he is thinking that my Guru Maharaj just said that if somebody hears this mantra, they will get liberation and they will achieve a pure devotion unto the lotus feet of Lord and they will achieve the supreme destination of Vaikuntha. So he said that, why don't I give it to everybody? Because Ramanujacharya's heart was full of compassion. So he decided that I am going to give this mantra to everybody. It doesn't matter if I go to hell. So like Prabhupada says that there are some instructions of your guru which you can sometimes not listen to. Like we see in Bali Maharaj's pastime, he doesn't listen to Shukracharya. Or we see in the four Kumaras' pastime, they don't listen to Lord Brahma when he tells them that become Grahasthas. They want to remain Brahmacharis. So because for a higher purpose Ramanujacharya was doing this, he decided not to adhere to the instructions of his guru. So he actually shouts, he tells everyone that everyone come, I have a great treasure, a great wealth to give to all of y'all, which will actually liberate y'all from this world. So the word spreads and villages of people come. Thousands and thousands of people gather because everybody wants this great wealth or this great treasure Ramanujacharya has to give. And because so many people have gathered, Ramanujacharya is not even able to see. So he climbs up on the tower of a temple. And you know, if you go to South India, you can see, you can still see it in Sri Rangam, this tower of the temple. So he climbs right up and from there he shouts out the whole mantra to these thousands of people. And everybody is then dancing in ecstasy when they hear, he makes them repeat that mantra. And everybody, all those thousands of people who have gathered, they are actually feeling ecstasy. They start dancing in ecstasy because they have received the mantra from a pure devotee like Ramanujacharya. And his whole aim was compassion for them. So obviously because he was so pure hearted and he had this noble intention, everybody received the mantra with that mercy which was coming from Ramanujacharya and they immediately felt ecstasy and devotion to the Supreme Lord. And when Goshtipurna hears this, actually Ramanujacharya goes back to Goshtipurna to tell him that he has done this and to beg forgiveness. And Goshtipurna is actually very upset. He says that I told you not to give this mantra to people. I told you you'll go to hell. So now you'll have to suffer in hell because you have given out this secret mantra to everybody. And then Ramanujacharya explains to Goshtipurna why he had done that. He says that it doesn't matter if an insignificant soul like me goes to hell, but if these thousands and thousands of people can achieve Vaikuntha, like you had said this mantra can do. And when Goshtipurna hears this and he sees the compassion in Ramanujacharya's heart, he actually falls at his feet and he says that you are actually my guru, so please accept me as your disciple. So this is how, you know, this is the pastime, but we see how Goshtipurna had tested Ramanujacharya before he gave him this mantra initiation. And we see even our own Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he wanted to take initiation, his father Bhakti Vinod Thakur told him that go and take initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur went several times to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. But again, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was also very humble. Plus he wanted to see the determination of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he does not initiate him. And Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj has to go back and forth many times. And then Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj initiates him when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that I am going to commit suicide by jumping off a bridge and drowning myself in the Ganga. So then he agrees and he initiates him. So we see in ISKCON also, like we heard in yesterday's class, we have this process where the guru actually gets an opportunity to test the disciple. So we don't see the guru talking to the disciple directly. That process has been very nicely structured in ISKCON, where we have, you know, the shelter exam, we have the initiation exam, the Brahmin initiation exam, plus there is the waiting period. And in that waiting period, the determination of the disciple to whether he is able to execute the 16 rounds, also following the four regulative principles, all that is tested out, and only then the disciple is given initiation. And in the same way, it also gives opportunity for the disciple to then see, because it's very important that a disciple also has chosen the right guru for him. So that is the testing out period for the guru and disciple to establish their relationship with each other. And in that matter, I was reading in a book about how Srila Prabhupada was so humble, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and all of them, in terms of being called a guru. So once Srila Prabhupada was sitting in an assembly, and there was some news reporter who had come, I believe this was in London, and they had just finished a successful program where the news reporter had seen how many thousands of people had come to listen to Srila Prabhupada. And then the news reporter was interviewing Srila Prabhupada. And he was asking Srila Prabhupada that, looks like you are the guru of the entire world, Srila Prabhupada. And everybody was waiting eagerly to see what Srila Prabhupada is going to say. Now, Prabhupada is the founder Acharya, and he is actually the guru. Because thousands, and the moment that he has started, this ISKCON movement, there are thousands and thousands of people. I heard there are more than 100,000 initiated disciples in ISKCON. So Prabhupada has started a worldwide movement, and he actually can be called the guru of the entire world. But in all humility, looking at the floor, Prabhupada actually had tears in his eyes. And he said that, no, I'm not the guru of the entire world. I'm just the servant of everyone. So that is the mood Srila Prabhupada always had when he was being called the guru of the entire world. In fact, you know, we have this good system. I was speaking to someone few years ago in the temple. There was a lady who had come, and I was trying to, it was my book marathon month, so I was trying to distribute some books to this lady. And I was telling him about, she was asking me a few questions, and then the question of guru came up. So she was telling me that she and her mother and daughter, both were there, and this was a grown-up daughter. So she was telling me that, oh, we already have a guru. I said, really? Which sampradaya? Like, who is your guru? Then she is turning to her mother and asking, in, you know, she was a South Indian, so in Tamil she is asking, Amma, who is our guru? So she did not even know. She is saying, I have a guru, but she did not even know the name of the guru. So like Prabhupada says, you know, people like to just put a photo of a guru on their wall and show off to others that, look, we also have a guru in our life. But in ISKCON, thankfully, we don't have this system. People are very serious when it comes to initiation. People know that, you know, accepting a guru or taking initiation is a lifelong commitment, where you are committing to actually do some, you know, the aspects of devotional service. You are committing to do them throughout your life. So we don't have these hodgepodge guru system, thankfully, in ISKCON, because of the good processes which Prabhupada and his disciples have set up. So we see that these are the three themes we see in today's verse, where Ashtanga Yoga, the difficulty of Ashtanga Yoga is discussed by Narad Muni. And even if someone does it, the risk of falling away from the goal of achieving the Supreme Lord is what Narad Muni is discussing. The second theme we see is how devotional service should not be left till old age, but we should start executing it from childhood. Like Prahlad Maharaj says, Komaram Acharet Pragyo. So that was the second theme which Narad Muni is talking about. And the third theme was how a guru tests his disciple, to see the faith and sincerity of the disciple, and also to bring out the glories of his disciple. So here Narad Muni is actually bringing out the glories of Dhruva Maharaj by testing him, and then showing the whole world that how he did not get dissuaded by Narad Muni's objections, but he took up to the path of devotional service and achieved perfection in a short period of time. Today is also the disappearance day of a famous personality, Govinda Ghosh. So we'll spend the next few minutes discussing about the life of Govinda Ghosh. So Govinda Ghosh was during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. His life story appears in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there were three brothers. There was Madhav Ghosh, Govinda Ghosh and Vasudev Ghosh. And all three brothers were very dear devotees and disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And all three of them were gifted with great singing ability. So all of them were very great kirtaniyas. In fact, Vasudev Ghosh, we have heard many of his kirtans Very famous kirtans which we sing in ISKCON. The famous song Yadi Gaur Na Hoy To was written by Vasudev Ghosh. Even Gauranga Tumi More Dayana Chhadi Ho, that was also written by Vasudev Ghosh. And even Jai Jai Jagannath Sachir Ananda, that was also written by Vasudev Ghosh. So all these three brothers were famous for their kirtan skills. And in fact it is said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda used to dance when the three brothers used to sing kirtan, because their singing was so melodious and full of devotion. In fact, Govinda Ghosh specifically was famous for doing kirtans during the annual Rath Yatra at Jagannath Puri. It is said that Govinda Ghosh used to lead the fourth party. So if we know in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned that there are seven parties who used to be around Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, singing and dancing for the pleasure of Jagannath during Rath Yatra. And Govinda Ghosh was the lead singer. He was the leader of the fourth kirtan party. And Vakreshwar Pandit was the lead dancer. So every kirtan party used to have a lead singer, a lead dancer, lead musician. So in this fourth party, it was Govinda Ghosh who used to sing very melodiously for Lord Jagannath. And his bhajanasthal, it is mentioned, is Agradweep. So Agradweep is a few kilometers away from Navadweep. And he established the famous Gopinath temple over there. So I have been told, I have not visited Agradweep, but I have been told there's the deity is still being worshipped in Agradweep. So once time, during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, he actually had accompanied Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Jagannath Puri. And once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after his lunch, he was looking for a mouth freshener and he was looking for a famous fruit. It's a fruit called Haritaki. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was looking for this mouth freshener of Haritaki. And Govinda Ghosh immediately ran and brought this mouth freshener for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked questioningly at him. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, he was a renunciate. And he used to encourage that even in his followers. So he questioned Govinda Ghosh that I just had a desire to have Haritaki and you immediately produced it for me. You immediately got it from somewhere for me. That means that you are storing food grains in the house. And as a renunciate, my philosophy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always used to tell that never store food grains, always depend on the Supreme Lord. And day to day, the Supreme Lord, whatever He provides, that is what we will have. And that is what a highest sannyasi does. So they don't store, like, you know, grahasthas, we do for store food grains. We don't go every day out to buy or we don't go every day out to beg. But as sannyasis, the highest standard was what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to teach to his followers. So he would always say that don't store food grains in the house for the next day or the next day. That actually reduces your dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So every day go for madhukari. Whatever you get on that day is what you will eat for that day. So he questioned Govinda Ghosh. He said that means you are storing some things away. Now Govinda Ghosh actually had done that for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that whenever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu needs something, it's available. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to teach to the world that he actually is a strict renunciate sannyasi. And he doesn't appreciate the storing of things for him. So he then tells Govinda Ghosh that it is better than you go to Agradweep and you become a grahastha and you start, you know, you establish the worship of Gopinath deity. Obviously Govinda Ghosh was crestfallen, because he was sent back from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association. But he had to execute the order. So he came back to Agradweep. And once when he was taking his bath in the Ganga, there was a very heavy log of wood which touched his back. And he kept that log of wood on the banks. And in the dream at night, it was revealed to him that please preserve that log of wood carefully and you will receive further instructions on what to do. So the next day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually came to him, to Govinda Ghosh. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that keep this log of wood safely. There is a sculptor who will come soon to you and that sculptor will help you carve the Gopinath deity. So then as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted, there was a sculptor who came and he helped Govinda Ghosh in carving this beautiful Gopinath deity, which Govinda Ghosh then started worshipping in Agradweep. He installed the deity and he started worshipping him. And then he got married, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had instructed him to. So once he got into the Grahastha Ashram, his whole family, his wife and Govinda Ghosh's wife and his son, all three of them used to worship the Gopinath deity very nicely. But very soon, in young age, his wife left. So Govinda Ghosh was actually very crestfallen that his wife has gone away in such a young age. But he continued looking after his son very lovingly and worshipping Gopinath deity. And he had a relationship with Gopinath deity like a father and son. So he used to worship thinking there's no one else, I have to, you know, feel Gopinath deity. Like he had that bhava for Gopinath. And very soon even his son died. And when his son left the world, Govinda Ghosh was very crestfallen. And he was actually very angry and upset with Gopinath. So he thought that Gopinath, he knows he's the Supreme Lord. So he thought that Gopinath has done this. He took my wife away, which is fine. I was still, you know, carrying on life without my wife. But now he took my son away as well. So he was very upset and he actually just lied down and he was lamenting that his son has gone away. And he was angry with Gopinath. So Gopinath waited for a day and he saw that no one came to open his darshan and no one came to feed him anything. So Gopinath got very worried. So the deity actually, it is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the deity actually comes to Govinda Ghosh and he realizes that my dear devotee is angry with me because his son has been taken away from him. So he starts massaging Govinda Ghosh's feet. Imagine the deity massaging the feet of his dear devotee. So he starts massaging his feet. And he tells him very lovingly, he says, hey Govinda, is it said anywhere that if your first son dies, you should starve your second son also to death? Has that been mentioned anywhere in the scriptures? Why are you starving me to death? I'm waiting here to receive bhoga from you, but you are not even coming to offer me anything. So Govinda Ghosh was very touched when, you know, he's a pure devotee. We have to understand this is a pastime happening. So he was very touched, but he was still angry. So he tells Gopinath deity, he says that a father usually has a son, and in Vedic times it was very relevant, because the son will then do the last rites for the father when the father leaves this world. And also he will keep doing the pinda, offering the pinda for his father, so that the father achieves a good destination. But you have taken away my son, so who is going to offer me my last rites when I die, and who is going to do the pinda for me? And if it is said that if somebody doesn't do that for their father or their forefathers, they have to rot in hell. So that is what will happen to me. Because I don't have a son now to do any of the last rites for me. And then Gopinath lovingly tells him. He says that I promise you, because your first son has gone away, this second son of yours will do your last rites. So the deity is promising Govinda Ghosh that he will do his last rites. He says, you don't worry at all. You please carry on your worship and I assure you that your last rites and your pinda will be taken care of. And actually Gopinath deity kept up his promise. So when Govinda Ghosh breathed his last, actually a tuft of kusha grass appeared in the deity's hand, because kusha grass is what is required to do the last rites and the pinda. So that appeared in Gopinath's hand. And the pujaris who had taken over the worship realized that Lord Gopinath is keeping up his promise. So even today, to date, on the disappearance day of Govinda Ghosh, the pujaris take the deity of Gopinath to the samadhi of Govinda Ghosh. And they actually, you know, the whole pastime happens of where Govinda Ghosh is performing pinda. Gopinath deity is performing pinda for Govinda Ghosh. So this is the life of Govinda Ghosh, how he could attract Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu to dance on his melodious kirtans, and how the deity himself is doing the last rites and the pinda for him because of his pure devotion to him. So we'll end the class here, and if there's any questions or corrections, comments. From what I remember, I did not read it when I was reading this pastime, but from what I remember, I think it was Om Namo Narayanaya. That is the mantra which usually Sri Sampradaya people chant. Anything else? Yes, Nataji.
I have a small correction, I'm sorry. Lord Chaitanya was holding his tongue in the storehouse. And the boy said, why are you holding your tongue?
Oh, thank you, Mataji. And that is when he tells him, you can chant anywhere you want. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu trying to chant when he was answering the nature's call. So Mataji is saying that actually he was holding his tongue because his tongue could not stop vibrating. And then the young boy asks Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why were you holding your tongue? And he actually then tells him that there is no restriction to time, place where you can chant the Hare Krishna mantra. You can chant it anywhere. Yes, Prabhuji.
That boy's name was Gopal, and after that he became Gopal Guru.
Okay.
And then Gopal Guru was
okay. Thank you so much.
I found the class interesting. You mentioned interesting points. Particularly about the point we were talking about how, in old age, you know, like oftentimes people recommend in old age, not, you know, I'll say in old age I'll take Krishna, but then as you were saying, when we get old, it's like we have so much less to offer. It's a little bit like, you know, Prabhupada sometimes we talk about people when they go to Vrindavan to give their life to Krishna, but they leave all their money and everything with their families. You know, Krishna wants that too. And so it's very nice. And also about going to the forest. Yeah, forest these days are very depleted. I mean, even if you live in the forest, what would you leave? You know, where we live, there's lots of forests. But there's something in there, some berries and things like that, but you know, not very much to maintain in life there. And two other sort of questions, I guess. You mentioned about, you know, sometimes the instructions of the guru, it's okay not to follow them, and then first off you quoted Sukhacharya's instruction for Bali as an example, but the thing there was he was instructing him not to surrender Krishna, so therefore he became a follower of the guru. But then I was wondering, under what circumstances, you know, is in ordinary dealings for a Vaishnava, would it be appropriate for them not to follow the instructions of the guru?
So the question is, under what circumstances, as practicing Vaishnavas, is it, should a disciple not follow the instructions of the guru? So these past, Prabhuji, you are senior, you are my senior, you only answer your question, Prabhuji.
Of course. I didn't ask the question.
I will share my limited realization on this. So the pastimes that we are talking about are, like you rightly mentioned, are when the guru was instructing the person, the disciple, not to follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is why the devotee had to, like Bali Maharaj, had to then not listen to the instructions. But in terms of the four Kumaras, if we see, the four Kumaras, Brahma was their father and their guru, and he instructed them because Brahma was given the responsibility of populating the entire universe. He was just he had started creation. So even if he was telling them to become grahasthas, it was to then follow the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to help Brahma in populating the universe. So that was not an instruction which was contrary to devotional service, actually, if we see. But even then the Kumaras did not follow that instruction because they had a higher purpose in their mind of, you know, staying brahmacharis throughout their life. They did not want their semen to flow downwards. They, urdhvarata we say, they wanted always the semen to flow upwards. So in this particular instance, when something is being done, or when we see Goshtipurna and Ramanujacharya, again there the instruction was not to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still, you know, for a higher purpose, or out of compassion, to distribute the mantra so that thousands of people can be benefited, Ramanujacharya did that. But as practicing devotees, we might not come across such instructions because, especially speaking of ISKCON, we have genuine gurus. And like you were mentioning in your class yesterday, that even in ISKCON to become a sannyasi, there is such a big waiting period. There is so many tests a brahmachari has to undergo before he becomes a sannyasi. And then to become an initiating guru, again, there is so much rigorous testing and waiting period. So in ISKCON, you know, we are very thankful to Prabhupada and the GBC for having gurus who are genuine gurus who are following Sadhu and Sastra and Prabhupada. So in ISKCON, I would feel that we would not come across such instructions where we don't have such instances where we don't have to follow the instructions of the guru. But yes, out in the world there are those hotpot gurus who might give you instructions about, okay, do this mantra or do, you know, do this particular thing so that you get lots of opulence or something like that. So they are so-called gurus, but they are not guiding the person to renunciation or to the path of devotional service. So in those instances, even in today's day and world, the person, the disciple can reject the guru if the disciple has realized that, yes, this is not the goal that I want to achieve. And then that disciple can seek out a genuine guru and take initiation from him. But in ISKCON, we are blessed not to have such instances where a guru will not tell a person to follow sadhu and shastra or the instructions which have been given by Prabhupada. That's my limited understanding.
But there have been a number of situations in ISKCON where gurus have gone off the rails and given instructions given disciples unusual instructions, like robbing banks and things like that.
Sorry, what was that? Last part?
Robbing banks.
Okay.
And naturally, a disciple would reject those types of situations and instructions. But my concern is more about, you know, because we see also that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't follow the instructions of teaching the shared spiritual master because he didn't agree with it. But it would seem like in the normal course of events for us in our everyday life, like you say, we wouldn't come across that. And it seems that this situation arises more for a very elevated person, like we're talking about the Kumaras. Obviously very elevated, we're talking about the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Ramanujacharya. You know, these personalities actually understood the higher principle, but I feel, at least in my situation, I'm not so knowledgeable, elevated, that I can understand the higher principle out of these things. And then to think that it's okay for me to reject the instructions of my guru would be somewhat on the mental platform, not really, you know, very wise thing to do.
And we always have the three-point check, like Prabhupada says in his books. We have guru, sadhu and shastra. So like you said, that if a guru is giving instructions like robbing a bank or something like that, then the third, you know, the other two point security check is also there, like, where, you know, you check with sadhu and shastra. So that is, you know, that's why we have this 3-point check. So we just don't rely on the guru, because what if the guru, like you're saying, is deviant or not adhering to the sadhu on the instructions of the sadhu and shastra. So we have these three sort of checkpoints to assist us then whether the instruction is right, wrong, is it deviant or something like that. That's what my understanding is. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yes,
you spoke about having determination to, you know, achieve the dream really quickly. What are the things that we can do practically on a day-to-day to expedite the pace, because sometimes feel like we're not getting anywhere, like, you know, actually sometimes feel like going backwards. So what is it that we can do in day-to-day practical life to make sure that we are progressing and progressing really fast?
Very nice question. So Prabhu's question is, what can we do to follow in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj? And the lesson we learn from Dhruva Maharaj's pastime is how to execute devotional service with determination and very quickly. So as practicing devotees, what I have seen, I'm also in the same boat as you, Prabhuji, first of all. I also feel I'm going backwards sometimes rather than moving forward. But from what I've heard from lectures and read in Prabhupada's books is, there's three things very important for practicing devotees. And those are the three sort of checkpoints for devotees. And that is sadhana, seva and sadachar. So on all these three checkpoints, a devotee keeps himself in check, sort of to see whether on these three fronts is he progressing nicely. So sometimes we see that a devotee might have very good sadhana. Now, every devotee has a different strength. Some devotees can do that austerity of getting up every day for Mangala Arati, irrespective of what time they have gone to sleep, and chanting their 16 rounds. And that way, you know, they have that good control over their sleep. While some devotees might not have that particular control, or they might not have so much determination. So that is why it's important that we have these three things. Because sometimes a devotee might be very good in his sadhana, like doing, you know, Mangala Arati chanting every day without fail. But in terms of sadachar, maybe he is not so good. So, you know, it's not that just sadhana is important. Okay, I'm chanting 16 rounds every day during Mangala Arati time, but what is your sadachar? How are you dealing? What are your etiquettes, Vaishnava etiquettes, when you're dealing with other devotees? And are you following the right method, or are you offending Vaishnavas? So again, on sadachar, some devotee might be very good on sadachar, very good in their dealings with devotees, But their sadhana is very lax. They are not, you know, endeavoring to chant early in the morning. They are not endeavoring to make chanting their priority. Or if these two things are in place, then seva. Some devotee might say that, no, I'm going to chant all the time, but I'm not going to do, even if someone tells him, can you please help, you know, in doing this particular seva. No, no, I have my chanting to do. So if a devotee does devotional service in isolation, and he just concentrates on his sadhana, and he does 64 rounds in a day, but the temple requires seva, then who is going to do all the seva? Who's going to, you know, maintain the temple, maintain the deities? Or if you're in grahastha ashram, who's going to maintain the grahastha ashram? Like, you know, we were talking to one grahastha couple, you know, they wanted some counseling on something, and the Prabhuji was asking that, I want to chant 32 rounds or 64 rounds. And he is a grahastha, he has two young children. And the wife was telling that, I'm telling him, how can you do that? You have to execute your duties. And he was thinking of reducing his working hours so that he can do that. But then we had to explain that there is always a balance. If you reduce your working hours, do you have enough savings to, you know, because you have to get your daughter married, they have to go to uni. So you have to, if you're grahastha, you have to look after these aspects. So that is why Prabhupada and the, you know, books have told us that we look at all these three things as a whole. And then we, you know, measure that, am I progress? Like sometimes we might go very fast ahead in sadhana, but what about seva and sadachar? That's why we see, we keep checking, am I progressing on all three fronts nicely in a balanced way? And that will help us to judge and also, you know, keep, you know, fine-tuning. Sadhana is going up, but sadachar is going down, or seva is going down. So keeping a balance between all three to progress as practicing devotees. Yes, Prabhuji.
You mentioned a story or an experience you had where you met a grown-up woman and her mother, and they had a spiritual master. And if I understood correctly, you were kind of questioning about who their guru was. And I'm wondering, what was the outcome of that query with them?
I don't remember. It was many years ago. But then I was explaining. She asked her, who is our guru? And the mother was also trying to recollect the name of their guru. So then I believe we had a conversation about what is bhakti, what is, you know, the guru system in ISKCON. I don't remember exactly what conversation it went, but definitely we distributed some books to them. And we also guided them to some home programs that were happening in their suburb so that they get the right association.
I had an experience a number of years ago in London. I was giving class at an art centre, and then someone was telling me about this Bhagavad Gita reading, and I was questioning that. I was like, you know, this is not, you know, necessarily the best Gita to use and read, you should use in Prabhupada's Gita. And then later on, Kripa Moipa referenced on that. So he's quite expert with Narmada preaching that. And he was making the point, it's actually better to encourage them in their spiritual path and try to give them some Krishna consciousness, because that then tends to encourage them to go forward, whereas if we're just questioning or criticizing their choices, oftentimes people will take that in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be encouraging.
Yeah. Thank you
so much. Just add something. That was Prabhupada's point always. He said, we're not asking you to change anything, just add.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just add something, then that will often encourage them more.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Okay, we'll end the class here. It's time. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.